Hello, my name is Gina Murphy Darling, and I would like to welcome you to the first episode of our podcast, Impact Humanity. This new podcast is intended to celebrate the daily choices we are all empowered to make that lay the groundwork for the future of our planet. Impact Humanity will showcase inspirational leaders that are showing up daily to craft a sustainable, healthy, socially just home for all. It is our hope that each episode supports you in exploring new perspectives, spark your drive to take action with these leaders, and give us all the tools to investigate what is possible, igniting our collective curiosity to create the world that works for all life. Our first guest is Mr. Michael Charles. Michael is part of the Strong Youth Movement, taking a global stance for the health of Mother Earth. Hailing from the American Southwest, Michael's family is from both the Navajo Reservation in Northeast Arizona and also Northern Colorado. Michael moved to New York to attend Cornell University, studying chemical engineering with a minor in music. At Cornell, he developed a strong sense of his own cultural identity, a passion for serving underrepresented students in the STEM fields, and began questioning how sustainability issues affect different communities. Thus, his research interests transitioned from biomedical research towards sustainability within the scope of engineering. Currently, Michael is pursuing his PhD at Ohio State University, exploring how ecological systems can be included with technological design to expand the boundaries of traditional engineering and find innovative solutions that promote sustainability without jeopardizing economic competitiveness. He is searching for an intersection between indigenous cultures and engineering. Listen to Michael's insights as to how we can each step into a place of hope in a world that often feels hopeless. He has three guiding principles to share that are rooted in his culture: indigenous-led movements, other indigenous cultures, and lessons he has learned from his relatives from all walks of life across the world. Michael is inviting all of us to fight the fight for the world we dream of, where we can all say, all is beautiful again. Welcome, Mr. Michael Charles.
In a quite famous graduation speech, Navy Admiral William McRaven said, "If you want to change the world, start off by making your bed." The message was simple and has been captured and retold over and over again. The idea is that if you want to set big goals, you've got to start with your everyday, simple, small tasks. A habit will form of setting goals and accomplishing them, and when you finish making your bed every morning, you'll have completed your first task of the day. As simple as this sounds, it can be hard to feel ready to hit the ground running every morning. Some days it feels as if the emotional, mental, and spiritual battlefields are too overwhelming to even begin to start your day with a physical task. And that's okay. There's value in both battling through the days and achieving the tasks you set for yourself, and also in recognizing you need to slow down, reset, and try again tomorrow. Let me introduce myself. Yate, Shikero Shidane, Shie Michael Charles Yineshe, Bilagana Nishle, Ashihibashin, Bilagana Dashiche, Ado Nakaida Ne'e Deshinali. My name is Michael, and I'm Dene, or more familiarly, Navajo. And I spent a lot of my time and energy fighting for recognition of indigenous rights, especially in the lens of climate change. Through my work, I am connected to a global indigenous family where I have brothers and sisters, aunties and uncles throughout the Amazon, throughout the tundra and the Arctic, from communities across the mighty continent of Africa, to relatives throughout the mountains of Asia, to those relatives who live on the ocean shores and throughout the islands of the Pacific, and of course, my family across Turtle Island, or North America. What I've learned from all my indigenous relatives who show up to protect their lands, protect their peoples, and protect each other is that we are powerful. I also have been fortunate to organize across the United States with an organization that focuses on youth-led movements fighting for climate justice through storytelling and action. I've met hundreds, if not thousands, of individuals through this work. Some who are just now learning what it means to take a stand to protect our Mother Earth and fight injustice in today's society, some who are elders who have practiced and carried the traditional knowledge of their people for decades, some who are bold and creative artists leading actions in the streets, and some who are veterans in international policy whom I work with in the halls of the UN. I've learned that as human beings, indigenous or not, we are powerful individually, and we are even more powerful as communities. However, this work can be heavy and can really take a toll on one's well-being. When we talk about climate change, we often talk about the future, which brings uncertainty and fear, as if today's news isn't scary enough. The impacts of climate change are already here. If we choose to pay attention, there seems to be a new catastrophe almost every week. And those catastrophes are not just climate-related. The world can be dark and full of racism, hatred, violence, hunger, disease, and there's no rule book for how to tackle these injustices, especially all at once. To make matters worse, depending on who you are and where you come from, you walk with even more fear every day. Whether it's your skin color, your gender, your sexuality, a disability, your income, your culture, or something else, this fear is real. With so much darkness and injustice, it is easy to feel hopeless in this world. This hopelessness can turn easily into exhaustion, and time again, I've witnessed burnout in our movements, especially in the young people organizing. Particularly for Indigenous peoples, both the young and the not as young, but especially the young, we carry historical, generational, and personal trauma that is unique, yet relatable to other marginalized communities. Although every single person I have ever worked with carries their own traumas and histories, it can impact anyone at any time and can truly impact your work and how you interact with your community. This trauma can feel like it's singling you out and remove you from the power of community. To help us with our battles, emotional, mental, or spiritual, I offer a twist to Admiral McRaven's quote. If you want to change the world, start off by healing yourself. This is the first of three guiding practices I want to share with you that I've taken away from my own experiences with my culture, with Indigenous-led movements, other Indigenous cultures, and lessons I've learned from my relatives from all walks of life across the world. These lessons are meant to be reflected on by anyone who is interested in being involved in social movements, social change, and collectively fighting for a better world. A beautiful world. A world where Black Lives Matter, a world where we understand Mene Wachoni, or water is life, a world where we reimagine systems of relationship and governance so that systemic racism and oppression begins to heal. A world where our spirits have truly learned to empathize with each other and the world around us. A world in balance with the ecosystems to which we belong. A world that we all wake up in, look east, and see beauty with each sunrise. Number one, if you want to change the world, start off by healing yourself. One of my highlights of working with an international Indigenous family is our collective ability to take time to prioritize our spirit before we get to work. 1 year in Bonn, Germany at the UN climate negotiations, I remember specifically waking up early to be in ceremony with relatives from all over, hearing prayers in English, Spanish, and many of our own traditional languages. I remember being able to feel the strength of people in the circle with me, even though I couldn't communicate directly with them. We acknowledged the sacred directions together and cleansed our spirit with the smoke of burning sage. As we gathered, it became obvious how many people walked by, stared, and used this gathering as a photo opportunity for their own gain, lacking the understanding of what was truly happening. Anytime I became distracted myself, I could look at how calm the elders were in the circle, focusing within our community and its collective spirit, focusing on blessing our work, thanking the earth for the ground we stood on, and asking protection over our bodies and those of our people. This helped me heal, gain energy, and focus on what we came to do despite my own exhaustion and lack of sleep from the work up to this point. Had I been alone, slept in, or even focused on those observing us, I would have missed out on the impact that this community had on my own individual healing that happened that morning. One of the many beautiful aspects of Indigenous cultures is the practice of ceremony. Ceremonies all have their own purposes, however, I would say that most are healing practices or related to the act of healing. Whether the act is physical or spiritual, ceremonies are practiced both individually and with community. This teaches us that although individual healing will require your own personal work, it can also be done with and supported by those around you. Another powerful aspect of ceremony is that it truly can shape a room and the environment around you, even those who don't directly participate. Before a meeting with the U.S. State Department, one of my Hawaiian brothers offered a chant from his people before we began our conversation. What we experienced for the next hour was the humanity of these officials revealing itself in different ways after many previous meetings, which only brought neutral and deflective words. Although it is one of the hardest things to do, Offering healing or prayer to those you're in direct conflict with can bring powerful peace, whether it's internal to you or begins to generate the external change you're looking for. If you neglect to acknowledge your trauma and take time to heal, you can really impact your community or your team and their ability to reach their goals. You can begin to extract the energy of others with your emotional and spiritual needs, creating a bigger burden on those whom you aim to serve. Therefore, find your spirit, acknowledge your traumas, face them head on, and prioritize your healing. Take responsibility for your healing and check in with yourself and others constantly. Reach out and ask for help from those around you and communities you trust. The process of healing may never be complete and will be a lifelong journey with highs and lows, so don't feel like you can't do the work you aim to do because you're not completely healed. Just be able to reflect and be honest with yourself when it's time to step back for a while or when it's time to step aside for a minute to regain balance and center your spirit. From my experience, your work will be much more powerful if it is led in resilience rather than trauma. Number two, walk in beauty, walk with direction. A Dene elder, my northern Athabascan relative, once told me a prophecy that he was told when he was a young man. Forgive me for my paraphrasing, but I tell this story often because what he told me struck my heart deeply. He told me, it was spoken that the white man would come, first for gold and oil, and we'd invite them to our lands, and they would take. And take. They would harm us and leave us with little, if anything at all, and we would remain and return to our practices. But the white man will return again, this time for food and clean water. And our response? We will forgive them and we will give them food and water. I cannot give a better example of what it means to walk in beauty. That is love. That is forgiveness. And to me, it shows the power of what it means to walk in my identity as Dene and as an Indigenous person. Walking is a simple yet sacred movement in our Dene culture and history. We have songs and stories that mourn the long walk of the Navajo, which led to a mass imprisonment of our people at Fort Sumner. And we also have songs that celebrate the act of walking away from imprisonment and returning to our sacred mountains after the Navajo Nation Treaty of 1868. We honor the relationship between our feet and the land with each step we take. But most well-known to non-Navajos is one of our prayers, which is centered around the concept of walking in beauty, or in Dene, Hoshogonesha. Walking in beauty is a direct result of taking the time to heal. It's a life way that ensures that our steps are respectful of the land, that our steps bring us strength to fight our fears, whether they be physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual. Walking in beauty means we walk with humility, understanding that our movements are not led by our egos, but by our love for justice and our love for our people. When we act with humility, we also honor all the work that has been done before us. We understand that our work has already been elevated by the work of our ancestors and the generations who fought for justice before us. It brings perspective to our work and can help us walk with patience. This patience can look like taking time to understand the roots of issues, understanding the thoughts and feelings of those who disagree with us, and it can also look like being slow to respond with words to those who are harsh with us. Walking in beauty means taking time to build relationships, understanding other people and celebrating them and the cultures that they practice. It means walking for future generations, understanding that we may not see all the results of our work, but it may serve our grandchildren or serve as a building block for the next generation of the movement. Most importantly, walking in beauty teaches us to treat others with kindness and love. It's an outward reflection of our own healing. As I say this, I also want to emphasize that it is okay to be angry. With everything going on in this world today, we should be angry. However, I believe that walking in beauty means that this anger builds as a disgust and hatred of injustice, as a hatred of racism, but not as a hatred of others. That hatred could also be renamed as a deep love for justice. And when you walk in this love, you are entering a battlefield. A battle where you are responsible and accountable to all acts of hate and injustice. And as your love for justice and hatred for injustice grows, so does your strength. Remember, love does not translate to weakness. It does not translate to backing down in a fight, but it does help direct your actions, your words, your mercy, and your ability to keep fighting. Every day, wake up. Heal yourself so you may walk in beauty, a radical beauty that centers kindness, forgiveness, and love. And when we succeed, we will walk with joy, happiness, confidence, and peace, and we will walk like this with every step in our entire being. Now, the second part of this is to walk with direction. This is how we learn to walk towards our destination, how we achieve our goals. Whatever the issue is, start with your own understanding of what is the injustice and how do you relate to it. Why is this important? How does it impact you personally? How does it impact those around you? How does it impact people you've never even met? These reflections can help start to acknowledge the injustice and what you aim to walk away from. But as you mature and you grow with the movement, you must understand where you are heading. Dream of what justice looks like. Draw a picture of the perfect world, in your head or on paper. When we can fight the injustice and win, where do we end up? This careful reflection, when done right, can help us from causing harm to other communities as we try to help and fight with and for our own communities. With all the interconnections of systemic injustices, it is essential that when we fight for justice for everyone. We fight for collective liberation. I first joined the environmental movement, which I'm placing in air quotes, because I noticed how many marches and protests around Standing Rock forgot to mention the human rights violations and harm being done to the indigenous peoples protecting their land. I observed lots of co-opting of the story of Standing Rock to talk about the fight against a pipeline and big oil, but not about the broken treaties and the disregard for the sovereignty of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe. I often play a role of fighting back against the Main Street movement to include the voices of indigenous peoples and ensure our rights are upheld as we fight climate change. More recently, we see a momentum for pushing a Green New Deal into policy at different levels of government. The concepts of reducing our carbon emissions, introducing a mass transition to renewable energy, and ensuring economic justice within the United States are all positive ideas. However, we also need to understand the global impacts of achieving these goals and ensure that policies have safeguards that protect the most vulnerable people in other countries, primarily in the global South, from whom we import many of the materials needed to create technologies like solar panels. If we don't fight for the protection of those in other countries from the policies of our own government in the United States, then we are simply creating another divide within the global movement for environmental and climate justice. We must learn to think holistically, bigger than ourselves, bigger than the current generations walking the earth. We must adopt a holistic worldview, common to the thinking and worldviews of many indigenous peoples. If we are able to build empathy through our own relationships and the stories we hear across the globe, we can continue to keep building on our visions of what a just world looks like. We can tie in the injustices of other relatives on this earth that we may not even fully understand ourselves, and we can better understand the destination of collective liberation. It's important to remember that walking towards collective liberation together does not mean that every small action and step must highlight every single injustice that is occurring in this world. We would never be able to take our first step. We must have the ability to highlight and support several different movements and demands with focus and understand the relationships between injustices. Our collective fight doesn't mean we all say the same thing at the same times. It means focusing on what's urgent, highlighting and supporting movements and their momentum, and if necessary, putting aside our own agenda or campaign for the moments of others. At some moments, many different movements will be pushing forward at the same time, working on communication and solidarity across all fights for justice. And at other moments, it will be time to all stand together for the ones who need to be heard most urgently. When our society and our movements learn to do this, we can walk towards our destination together. A destination where Black Lives Matter, a destination where we understand Mene Wachoni or water is life, a destination where we've reimagined systems of relationship and governance so that systemic racism and oppression begins to heal, a destination where our spirits have truly learned to empathize with each other and the world around us, a destination found after a rapid response to climate change, a destination that we all see as beautiful. Now, with everything happening across the country, after the racist murders of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and countless other Black relatives over the years, I want to acknowledge and honor these names, their families, and the movement that has gained momentum over the past weeks. Walking in beauty looks like having a deep hate for the murders and the racism occurring all over this country, and first looking to listen and empathize with those in pain before you even think about opening your mouth about the destruction of replaceable materials. We will rebuild. And when we learn to walk in beauty together towards the destination of collective liberation, then we will rebuild together. And we will rebuild much more than buildings. I know I'm still learning a lot on what it means to show up and fight with my Black relatives, but I'm hoping that praying for a humble heart and an open mind will teach me. To those who are non-Black people of color, it's time for us to step up and amplify Black voices and Black leadership around this fight. We must remember that the fight for justice within our own communities is connected to the fight for justice within the Black community. And right now, we all must allow Black voices and Black organizers to lead us in this battle against racism and institutional violence. Now, the way that the prayer that I originally introduced ends is by stating all is beautiful again four times. And today, I offer this prayer to our Black relatives, especially those struggling with hope. And I offer it to every single person showing up to the fight. Hojo nahashkli, hojo nahashkli, hojo nahashkli, hojo nahashkli. When we walk in beauty, we can walk together towards our destination, where all is beautiful again. Number three, balance the movement. I remember my first direct action that I led with a team of Maori youth at the UN climate negotiations in Germany at the time. The idea was to pass the mic from amplified voices within the climate justice movement towards Indigenous voices who have struggled and fought for every opportunity that they've had to share their perspectives. We had non-Indigenous allies make a circle around the speakers with tape over their mouth and letters that spelled out, "Decolonize." I remember how uncomfortable I first felt holding a sign that asked people to join us and listen to our stories. I didn't want to be the center of attention of all these people. I didn't want to shout. However, I trusted that this would bring attention to Indigenous issues that were being discussed in the negotiations. When I think of balancing the movement, I think of committing yourself to serve in unfamiliar, uncomfortable ways. Not only will you grow and learn from the experience, those around you may gain confidence to reach their uncomfortable zones that will help them grow. Although I still don't feel entirely comfortable in direct actions and protests, I still show up and help out in whatever way I can. The Dene word that you heard in the ending of that prayer shared earlier is a concept bigger than just beauty. It can be described by many English words, but none that captures the full meaning. Hojo can mean beauty, harmony, balance, restoration, and many other things, but I use this word because it was first explained to me as a natural balance. If our movement is aiming to protect nature, why don't we spend more time listening to it, observing it, understanding it? Hojo is a balance between us five-fingered beings and the many other spirits who call Earth Mother. It captures the cycles of the natural world and the balance of all the lives which must be sustained on this planet. When we understand nature both around us and within us, we see sacred seasons of rest and activity from both plants and animals. We see the decomposition of the old as it enriches and propagates the new. We see relationships and reliance on specific characteristics and skill sets. One thing I didn't mention yet is that my full-time job and income come from my work as a researcher. I'm currently finishing up my PhD in chemical and biomolecular engineering and spend a majority of my time trying to solve sustainable design problems. But what is so great about balancing my contributions to the movements of Indigenous rights and climate justice is that my perspective as a researcher is extremely unique and has carved out my own niche to study. On the other hand, as a protester and organizer, I understand a lot about climate science and the current research that is available and can help educate those around me. And finally, my combination of knowing climate science and the demands of the people has really helped me as someone who has found a niche in working on climate policy around Indigenous rights and the impacts of climate change on Indigenous communities. Serve in an unfamiliar way. When you see an opportunity, you will learn, and everything you learn can help you grow. One thing I've learned from working particularly with Indigenous youth in environments like the UN is adjusting to the shock that this space is not inviting. It's demeaning and it's impressive. The work we get called to do was not meant to be easy, and we need to understand that. But our ancestors and our cultures have fought different battles every generation, and we're still here. Our people are resilient, and it's our job to continue the work. When we work in groups, we need to utilize the strengths around us, but also make sure that there's room for others to step up and grow. Another aspect of balancing the movement and preventing burnout is ensuring that we understand the importance for rest and working in a community. Learn how to say no and to step back when you need. Learn from nature and the function of hibernation and the presence of day and night to encourage yourself to rest and sleep. But also understand how to teach others what you know so that whatever you do, you can be replaced. This is important in ensuring the longevity and the success of a social movement. Decompose your knowledge for the next generation and teach your peers so that when you need rest,
the work can go on. We all hold knowledge, and that knowledge is only valuable if others can understand it and share it. Honor the knowledge you hold. Share it. Along with rest and serving in different roles, we need to understand how to braid our movements with physical, emotional, and spiritual issues. If we can understand the relationship between these different aspects of our being and how the issue impacts each one of them, we can not only reach bigger audiences, but we involve more people. This helps us all bring our full self to the work we do. It also helps us introduce more roles and really challenge our movements to incorporate many different roles to come together and work effectively. Working in Hojo teaches us the importance of adjusting our theory of change to incorporate the value of all the work being done for the sake of the movement. In my own work, I always hear and see conflict between the value of working within the system, such as the work at the UN or the work at the voting booth, and taking to the streets, such as actions which involve creative displays or organized protests. My experiences have taught me that both do play an important role, and a movement needs both. The movement we build for justice must build masses, and the different skill sets that everyone brings should be utilized as much as possible. Encouraging people to try new things along the way, and encouraging everyone, every day, to continue to educate themselves on the issues and what we're fighting for. The last, but certainly not least, idea I want to bring to light is the balance of the volume of voices that we hear in mainstream society. This is rooted in the idea that certain voices are silenced and have been silenced throughout history. So to bring balance to the sound level, we must amplify these voices. Additionally, history has set heavy weights on specific communities of the world. And if we aim to achieve Hojo as a society, we must actively place counterweights. These weights can include other communities stepping back and supporting marginalized communities. It can look like the understanding that Black Lives Matter should not be countered with All Lives Matter. It can look like understanding to be more than non-racist and embracing vocal anti-racism. And it can look like making demands for climate justice past what we believe governments will accept. When injustice exists and has been so heavily throughout history, it means that there will be lots of work to do if we want to counter the weights of historical and systemic injustices. Only then will we all be able to walk together towards our destination of collective liberation. So, let's get to work. Let's fight for the world we dream of. Every one of us can play a role. That role may be stepping back, and it may be stepping forward. But we must remember, if we want to change the world, we must start by healing ourselves. That way, we can walk in beauty and walk with direction towards our destination of collective liberation. And on our way there, we will work to balance our movements so that we may all understand Hojo. And we will continue fighting until we reach our destination. And then we will all say together, Hojo Nahashkli, Hojo Nahashkli, Hojo Nahashkli, Hojo Nahashkli. All is beautiful again.